money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Good morning, you beautiful bunch of fuckers, and welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. It is Thursday, December 7th. We are here live. It's sort of a free-for-all today. Today's a little weird. Joel is going to be joining me this morning. Henry wasn't able to make it. We kind of moved trucking technology and efficiency to today because I won't be doing a show tomorrow. We don't have Rolling Tow today. We still don't have them up and running on the new phone system. So we will be working on that. It looks like we are going to get Henry in today. It looks like he can make it. So we're going to jump right into trucking technology and efficiency. You can also just ask us anything today. It's kind of a free-for-all, so we'll mix it up. We're probably going to wrap this up pretty early today. Thinking maybe 11:30 Central Time, so an hour and a half from now, wherever you happen to be, or sooner if we run out of questions. I have two more busy days. I am actually parked at Nastic this morning. I moved over here early this morning. I've got two busy days here at Nastic, a busy day of meetings today, and then tomorrow I'll be going through the Nest training and seeing what that's all about. And then I doubt that I'll be able to pull out of here tomorrow night. I will probably roll out of here very early Saturday morning. And I'm finally going to be pointed back towards the Pacific Northwest. So I'm a little excited about that. I really want to get home. I've been on almost 2 months, maybe over 2 months. I do have one stop in Boise. I'll be speaking at a sales meeting for truckstop.com. And once I get done in Boise on the 12th, I've got about a day home from there. It's about 8 hours back from Boise. So it'll just depend on how long I am there at truckstop.com. But I should be getting home before the end of next week. Looking forward to it. Right around the end of next week, maybe. So really looking forward to that. We're just going to jump right in. I think we've got both Joel and Henry. I'm going to bring them both on this morning. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. There we go. Everybody here.
Or I should just say morning.
Oh, yours isn't good? Mine's been good so far.
Well, it's good. I got up. I'm on the right side of the grass. But, you know, we talk about doing things for efficiency, and to me the reserve parking is part of that, that you can plan ahead, you know what you're doing, and, you know, everybody cries that there's, or many people cry that there's a parking shortage. There's not a shortage of parking. There's just a shortage of people willing to pay for it. And you pay for parking, and when you get, and you have to fight around for an hour to get a spot because there's freeloaders in your spot.
You know, they got to fix that. I have said many times, I'm with you, if we want better parking in this industry, we should just be willing to pay for it like any other service you need to pay for. I don't know why we think parking should be free. I guess we think it should be free because truck stops have always provided it. And then what does everybody do? They complain about the cost of everything in the truck stop. Parking is expensive. Parking for heavy trucks is really expensive. And if we want better parking, we should just be willing to pay for it.
Yeah, there's no shortage of land to park trucks on. There's a shortage of places to park a truck for free. And, you know, it's funny, anytime I go into a city or whatever in my personal vehicle, it costs me more to park a car than it does a big truck.
Of course. And nobody ever says anything about that. Go into any downtown area, you're going to pay to park a car. I don't know why we get so freaked out that somebody wants us to pay for parking.
So anyway, it's, you know, that's what got me aggravated. So then they moved me over to a spot next to where the driveway was going out because that didn't happen, so I got to listen to trucks thunder by me all night, you know, and using their jigs because they couldn't slow down for the traffic light at the truck stop. So that's got me in sort of a mood.
Hey, Henry, that's enough. Don't be raining on our parade.
You know, I was just gonna make a point that, you know, we pay to use the highway with heavy trucks because they pound the hell out of the highway, right? We got the highway use tax and whatnot, so we pay for that, but we're not expected to have to pay for parking. That multi-million-dollar parking lot just magically appears. It magically maintains itself. And, of course, we all know that all of us truckers out here, we pick up after ourselves. We don't litter. We don't leave stuff out in the parking lot that we're not supposed to. And, you know, I think everybody's got a right to bitch about, you know, no free parking.
Joe. You know what? The drivers do a lot to support it because I see a lot of them when they take their leaf blower to blow out the back of their trailer and all the nails and everything go on the ground, it destroys tires that they have to buy at that, so then they have to go buy them at that truck stop.
There you go.
Pull into a truck stop with a lousy parking lot and everybody bitches about it, including me. Somebody recommended I go over to this one little truck stop in Mississippi a couple weeks ago, and they said the ribs were really good. They had good barbecue, and I was hungry, and I didn't want to cook that day, and I was going right by it, and I needed fuel anyway. So I thought, well, perfect. I'll just go there and grab some fuel. This place was a dump. I mean, the parking lot was absolutely awful. They had 5 pumps, and only 2 of them were working. But no, it wasn't crowded, so I managed to get in there, get fuel, did get some good rack of ribs. But I also made a mess of my coach in their parking lot. They didn't have potholes. They had ponds. I mean, it was bad. I'd be willing to pay to park there if they would improve the parking lot.
Yeah, you get what you pay for, right?
Well, you bought fuel, so you ought to have parking.
Of course, the margins on fuel are just so good, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you ought to
give me a shower too, and a free coffee, and pat me on the butt on the way out the door.
I bought a truck. Why didn't you throw in a trailer? No, you bought a truck. You want a trailer? Go buy a trailer. They're two different things. Well, you bought. Well, that has nothing to do with parking.
And just to add to Henry's point, when they give you the free cup of coffee and a pat on the back, make sure you call me a hero on the way out or I'm not going to be satisfied.
Because I move America.
I'm a hero. If I shut down, everybody would starve to death.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I don't think we've talked about this, but I was wondering what this Buc-ee's phenomenon was all about. And then I saw that drivers started to complain because they don't allow trucks in there. So I had to see what this was all about. So on the way up here, there's a big Buc-ee's. My God, I've never seen so many fuel pumps in my life. It was insane. So I go inside, and it's like the size of a Walmart. And I was a little excited. I'm looking around. They got all kinds of beef jerky. They've got a smoked, like smoked meats. And I'm like, well, this is kind of cool. Now, I will tell you, the way they set up their parking lots, don't even attempt to get in there with a truck. I had a tough time getting around their parking lot in my coach. It was tight in a lot of places. So they made sure they didn't want people coming in there with trucks. But here's the thing. After spending, honestly, about 2 hours inside that store, I will never go back again. That food they have in there, they produce a lot of their own food, or they have it produced specifically for them, is some of the worst processed chemical garbage I have ever seen in my life. It makes McDonald's look like health food.
Well, Kevin, that's what you have to do when you're serving beaver meat at Buc-ee's. Right? You've got to treat it, I guess. I don't know.
So like, I like beef jerky, and they have all kinds of flavors. And I'm like, well, every package of beef jerky I picked up, one of the first ingredients is MSG. Who the hell was MSG? Jerky.
You read the label wrong. It wasn't beef jerky. It was beef jerky. It's beaver meat, so they have to put MSG on it to make it taste good. Oh, shoot.
So then I thought, all right, I'm going to go over to the where they're smoking the meats. They had a pulled pork sandwich. Well, obviously, I don't want the sandwich because I'm not going to eat the bun. And I don't want their barbecue sauce because I couldn't recognize any of the ingredients on there. When you look at the ingredient list for the sandwich, so it's got pulled pork, barbecue sauce, and a bun. I am not exaggerating. You will have to scroll on your phone to be able to see the entire list. I've never seen so many ingredients in one sandwich in my life.
Well, you should feel like you get your money's worth, I guess.
The crazy thing to me is I know why they use all that crap, because it's cheap. But it seems like, how could it be cheap? Just think about the logistics of wherever they're producing this stuff, all of the deliveries of all those chemicals and all that crap and all the equipment to handle it and all the other things that have to happen to make that work. How could it be cheaper?
When I used to do food-grade deliveries in pneumatic tanks, I used to haul a lot of flour, and I'm not going to mention any names, but there would be some bakeries you would go to, and there was just simply a silo for the flour, and it smelled like bread, and it was pretty straight up at some bakeries. And other bakeries you'd go into, literally the outside of that place looked like a refinery. There were tanks and tubes, and it smelled like crap. You're like, man. And it's some of them that would really surprise you. You know, they've got the name for organic or whatnot, and, you're like, oh, my goodness, what a – yeah, but literally you would be confused. You would think that you're in an oil refinery and you're at a bakery.
Has to be where they were producing this food for Buc-ee's.
Most likely.
I just don't understand how that's cheaper.
Wow.
You know, I
don't know. You know, these factories that convert all this beaver meat and beaver pelts into food.
hey,
it gets expensive, I guess.
I have a good trivia question for you about this. Where does artificial vanilla and artificial raspberry flavor come from?
Beaver tails.
Beaver anal glands.
Lovely. Lovely.
That is a true statement. Yes, artificial vanilla and artificial raspberry.
I did not know that we had that many beavers in existence to be harvested for artificial ingredients. I thought they were on the endangered species list, but apparently not.
No. So,
wow.
You know, you just – so barbecue sauce makes me crazy, because I don't care if you get – like you might think it's the best name ever, Famous Dave's or whoever, pit masters that put their name on a barbecue sauce. Every one of them, the first ingredient is high fructose corn syrup. It's all garbage. Here's the thing. Yep. I teach people how to make really, really good barbecue sauce, and it takes three ingredients, four maybe. A good no-sugar ketchup, and they're fairly easy to find on the market. Apple cider vinegar and molasses. And then throw in a little bit of liquid smoke, and I like a little heat in mine, so I throw in something for heat. You can make the best barbecue sauce like that in four ingredients. And there's no high fructose corn syrup or sugar anywhere.
Gotcha. Hey, I got a quick one here for you, Kevin. I have the heaviest load that I have pulled and been able to get axle up. I'm right around 67,000 pounds.
Ooh.
And I'm axle up. So I'm 14.6 out on the steer. I'm 18.6 on the drive, and right around 34, and so they're rolling me into the scales right now. Let's see how this goes. In real time, we'll see if they're gonna complain about this.
You're on the wide base singles now, aren't you, Joel?
I am.
There is a couple of states that you would be overweight on your drive.
I'm not sure if this is one of them. That's why I'm interested to see if they're going to pitch a bitch about this.
We will see. I know
Idaho's one of them.
I know those regs are on the books. Do they actually enforce them? Does anybody at the scales even know about that?
Yes.
I have never been popped for it, but I've heard of people that have. So.
Yeah, I haven't heard of it much. Hey, Joel, I want to ask you something before I forget. I should know the answer to this later today. Is Volvo producing an engine with an external damper?
You know what? I'll look at mine. I think this one is.
I think this is. We had a call on Tuesday, the Power Hour. Guy had a Volvo. I don't remember all the details. I think it was a newer one. And he had a horrible vibration under power. And we went through all the, are you sure it's under power only? And he said, yeah, if I'm, you know, in the throttle, I can feel it. As soon as I let off the throttle, it smooths right out. And I said, well, that's almost always going to be in the engine somewhere. It might be driveline, but it's probably engine. And I said, and he said, damper, and it's got almost 500,000 miles. And I said, no. I said, and even if it is, it's internal on the Volvos, and there's nothing we can do. But I've never had anybody show up with a significant vibration in a Volvo with an internal damper. So I don't think it's that. I said, if I had to guess, I would say motor mounts. And
it could be. Yeah.
Well, it turns out he made it to Pittsburgh Power. And they were looking at the engine going, this looks an awful lot like a damper on the front of this engine.
Uh-huh.
And the grooves cut in it like the BD-15 dampers. And so they actually got the serial number, and they're reaching out to Volvo to verify. But they said it really looks like an external damper. But here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
The front motor mounts were gone. No bolts.
Motor motor mounts are famous on that, and also, you know, we always talk about the overhead and making sure that they have the plungers adjusted. That will also create that vibration under power. So those two things are very common. Even if that is an external mount, here's the explanation as to why a Volvo damper will typically last longer than what you'll find on a Cummins. It's because of the journal overlap in the crankshaft. The crankshaft is much stiffer than what's in a Cummins. It has a smaller bore, so it has less G-force every stroke coming down on more journal overlap. So there's significantly less flex and vibration in a Volvo crankshaft than there is in a Cummins crankshaft. And because there's less vibration, your damper's going to last longer.
And that makes sense. That's the whole point of the damper. It's absorbing that torsional twisting and the pounding. So, if the engine design creates less, then it makes sense. And it also explains why even past a million miles, I don't really get any complaints about an engine vibration in a Volvo.
Exactly 100% right. And especially when you get into hot climates like Australia. I know Cummins had fits with their stuff trying to get a damper to work over in Australia. And, you know, the Volvos, especially like with the D16 over there, it's just got massive overlap on the crankshaft. They just don't have that particular problem. So it's just something to keep in mind. I know a lot of people are like, oh, how could that possibly be? Why could it last longer? It's just the basic engine architecture that you like to talk about all the time. A massive crankshaft with a lot of journal overlap, a small bore, and we're not side-loading or, you know, thrust-loading the liner. So we have a lot less going on in terms of, you know, really funky energy transfer going down through the crankshaft.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I wonder what the issue is with the front motor mount. Sound like it's a thing. This is the first one I've come across. Just the way he was describing it, he said it almost has to be motor mounts.
Is the truck an I-shift?
I don't remember. I don't think we got into a lot of details on the specs.
So if the truck was an I-shift, one of the things that the salespeople haven't got their head around, so when we were putting 308s and gears like that in every truck, our default starting gear was like third or fourth gear all the time. And it
right.
worked with that rear axle ratio. When we started to get down to 264s, they never changed the default starting gears in the parameter list. And so they would keep it at third or fourth gear, and starting in that higher gear, which was under load, would
yeah.
take the motor mounts out. Also plays hell with the transmission itself. You know, guys that will say, oh, the I-shift will only last 500,000 miles. Well, if you set your defaults wrong, you're probably right. You know, it's
yeah,
just the way that that's going to go.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's what my assumption would be. Probably an I-shift, probably had the wrong default starting gear, took the motor mounts out. Probably also has some issues with the overhead adjustment that they probably didn't verify the exhaust plunger. So the combination of everything going on there, you know, you're really going to think this truck's a pile of crap, but there are very specific things that you need to address to make that right, and then you're just fine.
And it's pretty simple stuff.
It is.
Once you know this, it wouldn't be a big deal at all. It'd just be kind of routine maintenance stuff to keep an eye on. I talked to Bruce about this truck this morning, and his recommendation to the owner was we should replace all the motor mounts, all the bolts, all the rubbers, everything.
I would. Yeah, while you're in there, absolutely.
Gone, you know you had to put an awful lot of stress on the motor mounts that are left. You have to believe
yep.
those bolts got stretched.
Yep, yep. If it is an I-shift, have them check that default starting gear. And if they have the premium tech tool, they should change that for them to default it to first so
Got
you don't
it.
Run into that problem again. Because if you don't, you're just going to take them out again.
Get the overhead done. All right. Well, that sounds good.
Yep.
What else we got going on this morning? We're probably going to wrap this up today at 11:30 Central Time, so roughly a little more than an hour from now. I'm in my final days over here at NASTIC. I got a bunch of meetings today and then some training tomorrow. And then I get to head this thing back towards the Pacific Northwest finally.
There you go. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. You sound like me here lately running team. I think we've run 57,000 miles in the last 90 days. So we've
nice. There you go.
Yeah, we've been moving some freight, so.
Well, I'm beginning to wonder if I do another long road trip like this, if I should hire a driver.
There you go.
you getting fed up with your driver, Kevin?
I am. I'm ready to fire him.
That's what I keep running into, too, for years now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
And then the driver threatens to quit all the time.
Yeah. Well, as much as I want to go home, I'm really not looking forward to the drive back. Normally I do. I'm just not looking forward to this drive. I've got to do it fairly quick. I was hoping I was going to be able to take the long way home, the southern route, and kind of take my time and relax a little bit. You know, I don't want to be out a whole lot longer anyway, but I don't want to have to run, you know, 10 and 11 hours a day right now. But it looks like that's what I'm going to have to do because I have like 3 days to get to Boise.
Gotcha.
That's what I run into. It's funny when you say that with the efficiency. I was figuring it up. If I run slow, it costs me $89 more a week in fuel. But I get home 12 hours quicker because it skips out a 10-hour break.
You mean if you run fast?
Yeah, if I run fast. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It makes it hard, $89 for 12 hours.
Yeah, well, it is. And when there's a real time crunch, and I've got a time crunch, I'll probably run the speed limit. I usually never run over the speed limit, but I'll probably run the speed
right.
limit the way across the country. And normally I run 60 no matter what the speed limit is. But it's just, the little bit of time you can make up by driving faster on a trip like this, it's probably going to be worth it.
Well, yeah, and I really like running 60. If I get ahead of schedule where I can, I'll do that in a heartbeat.
I would
so relaxing.
Right, yeah. I'm not, and that's why I'm not looking forward to this drive, because I've got to drive pretty hard to make it. And, you know, you still have all the other stuff to deal with. I've got, you know, well, I'm not going to do much laundry during that trip. I just did my laundry before I left. But, you know, I got to cook. I got to clean up. I got to deal with the coach. And but most of this is just going to be drive and sleep. I'm not going to be parking anywhere for any length of time.
Well, same way if I do the other two runs I have, the one's 3,840 and the other's 3,860. If I run the speed limit, I can get that done.
Yeah.
And not with a whole lot to spare. It's the bad part about having set runs that I got it all figured out, but it's the good thing and the bad thing all in one.
By the way, they give me the green arrow through the scales. They didn't roll me around. There are three other trucks in front of me, so they didn't have a problem with my axle weights. Virginia.
Well, it sounds like you scaled that pretty precisely.
I always do.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, I'm a geek that way, right? Come on.
Room professional, that's right. That's right.
Do you have scales on your truck?
I do have some rudimentary scales, yeah. I was able to, like I said, get axle up, and on this particular round we're cruising at 62 mile an hour. The last round I done, the exact same round, I was just heavy enough where the axle came down, maybe 1,000 pounds heavier. That round I ran at 10.2. This one with the axle up at 62, I'm at 10.8. And the difference you can tell, it's not the rolling resistance difference, because when you pick the axle up, the footprint on the drive tire actually gets bigger.
Right.
It's the roll window. You do roll further, so there is a rolling resistance difference, but it's also, you know, the drag on the seals and the lube that's in the damn axle, and there's a lot of things going on there as well. And I get some really nice roll windows when I get axle up this heavy, and it really, really helps the fuel efficiency.
Nice.
I'm on 81, I can actually do better on 81 with this type of load than I can on flat ground.
Well, you know, going into that, I did some testing in the gorge there in North Carolina, and you picked up just shy of a full mile of the gallon lifting the axle up versus down, because the twistier the road, you're not dragging that tire sideways.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's a lot of things that play there that you might not think about when lifting that axle up, but definitely a big deal if you use it right. A spread kills you. What also kills you, if you have traditional gearing with a lift axle, you got to remember that gearing keeps the piston speed up, so it takes a lot of that roll window potential away. So as we get our gearing more aggressively downsped, the lift axles become more efficient. And a lot of people just cannot understand that. They just can't get it through their mind. Oh, I got a lift axle, and it doesn't make any difference at all. Well, you're running around on a 325 rear end gear versus a 215 in overdrive. So you're not going to see the same difference. And we know that rear axle ratio will cause your truck to accelerate faster. And when you accelerate faster on a 6x2, what happens? You get slippage and you get tire wear. And so the combination of no optimization for your roll window and increased slippage during acceleration, guess what? You're probably not going to see a whole lot of difference. But you get the gearing right and you get everything else right, and it makes a big difference.
Well, adding to that, when I had when I was a flatbed operation, my first trailer was a spread axle because that's what I could find at the time. I didn't want a spread, but after I had a spread, I really didn't want a spread. And when I switched to having closed tandems, the difference in operating costs there just from the tire scrub made it that my trailer was free in 5 years.
Oh, I believe that.
In comparison to operating.
I'll bet.
I believe that.
Hey, I first off, I already have somebody applying for my driving job. That was pretty quick.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Actually, they're not even just applying. They say they want the job. So.
So with this position, is this like the NASCAR drivers where they drive the NASCAR trucks that, you know, you got to cook meals and everything? And what all comes with that title?
Well, I'm going to have to think that through. That's laundry and meals. If I could get those off my schedule, that would free me up for some more business time as well. So maybe I need a full-term driver. Yeah. Well, of course, you got to keep your coach clean. Yeah.
Well, yeah, those NASCAR semi drivers, they do a lot besides drive.
That's right. I think that sounds good. I think we're going to have to do that. So I want to go back to the parking thing real quick. What do you guys think of the truck parking club?
You know, I was kind of getting interested in that when I was running solo. But now that I'm running team, I've absolutely no need for it. We're constantly moving. And so I really haven't paid much attention to it. But when I was doing the solo thing, I was gonna start digging into that because I thought, hey, that kind of makes sense. And then boom, all of a sudden I'm running team and I got no need for it. So I guess I don't have an opinion anymore. I haven't really paid attention.
Yeah. I that started it. He was here at NASDIC, and he was also at the F3 FreightWaves event. So great guy. He actually came from the banking industry. Really sharp. They just opened their 200th location. That's pretty impressive growth.
Well, gotcha. I talked to them quite a bit at NASDIC. My booth was right behind them. And I had also had them on a conference call with Trucking Solutions Group prior. And I was real interested, but I guess I don't follow through on that interest because I have my three main runs that I got figured out so well that I know where I'm going to park.
You know, I love the idea, and I've said if you're willing to pay for parking, parking will get better. Now, here's the thing. They already have 200 locations. You have to believe they're being used. And if nothing else, even for the cheapskates who don't want to pay for parking, by having more paid parking options, it will open up more free spots for them.
Sure. Absolutely.
So
quick word about NASDIC here, Kevin, if I can. You know, we have the fuel card through them, and we do a lot of our insurance on the truck through NASDIC. And I wish Alec was here to kind of – these people have been great for us on insurance. Part of my business plan is to have more than one truck running, and I am going to hire drivers because both trucks are going to be in a team operation, probably have 3 to 4 when it's all said and done. But I don't want to hire experienced drivers to run in a team operation. My plan is to hire individuals without experience and train them from the ground up.
I love
to do a very hardcore training process. So my son-in-law is going to be one of the first ones to go through this. And obviously he has to go through a driving school, which he just got signed up for. And then I expect I'm going to have him for probably over 6 months training him. And they were able to help us source insurance for that. It wasn't easy because most places are like, oh, no experience, we can't take it.
Right.
They were able to help us, realize our business model. So, great people to work with. They've been super. The insurance companies that they hook us up with sometimes aren't the best to work with, but they really go to bat for you when the insurance company starts to give you a little guff. They are on it, and I mean they are on it, and they solve some problems and take care of business that if it was just us individually, the insurance company would be laughing at us. So hats off to them.
Kevin, back to this parking thing.
Yeah.
The one thing I want to clarify, because I end up getting beat up on this different times, I don't think that a driver should ever pay for parking.
An employee driver,
truck
I agree.
Owner.
Yeah, well, I absolutely agree with that. I'm not saying truck drivers, employee drivers should be paying for the parking. The fleet should be paying for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you should figure that into one of your business expenses and, you know, and what you need to charge, you know,
now,
to move the
now fleet. I would say this, that if I were the employee driver and my fleet didn't pay for it, there would be times that I would be willing to. If it made my schedule better and my day better, it's not that expensive. I would be willing to pay, but I think the fleet should step up and do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I 100% agree with that. My brother's fleet, they pay for parking. No questions asked. You want to park somewhere, just send them a receipt. They'll pay for it.
I'd love that. And it is the fleets that could turn this around faster. If the fleets had policies like that, you would see more paid parking options popping up. And the Truck Parking Club is a great idea. They go out and contract with places that have lots of space available. Hell,
Absolutely.
I almost thought about registering our warehouse. We have room for one truck. I mean, we could get one truck parked in there, and I thought about doing it, and I may. I don't know if it's worth it for one truck, but that's the kind of stuff they go out and find, places that are already there. They've got space. They don't mind having some trucks in there. Hopefully, they've got a plan to manage the damage and the trash, and so that doesn't become a problem, because we know that has certainly caused issues in places. You know, we're going to get to the calls here in just a minute, so hold on, guys. We've got a bunch of calls. I do want to talk a little bit about NASDIQ since we brought it up and we were talking about it. So I've known of NASDIQ for probably 20 years. I think I met David a long time ago at the Louisville Truck Show one year. We only talked for a couple minutes, and we were almost – it felt like we were almost competitors. You know, we didn't have a fuel card or an association, but we certainly have the education, the training, other products, things that they do. And so we didn't really, you know, come to any big plans or anything that time. We had a good conversation. And then there was a year where when I learned about they do that NEST training every month, the training I'm going to go through tomorrow, I reached out to David and I said, hey, you know, we've got a big event we do every year. It's 5 days. What do you think about doing your NEST training there? And he thought about it. And he thought he liked the idea. And we just couldn't make the dates and everything work out. So we just moved on. Those are the only two times I've ever talked to anybody at NASDIQ over all these years. I didn't know a lot about the company. They never advertise, really, other than the show they had on Dave Nemo. But other than that, they don't advertise anywhere. You never see them in the industry really much at all. And I didn't know a whole lot about it. The reason I always talked about them was their fuel card. I mean, how could you not talk about their fuel card? That thing's pretty damn incredible.
Sure.
And I never understood how that they could beat the big fleet discounts and just about everybody else. And now I completely understand. They have like 180,000 trucks.
Sure.
And they really focused on TA. It's one of their big fuel accounts in the beginning. And by focusing as many gallons and trucks as possible at the same places over years and years and years, they become the single biggest buyer in a lot of those chains, and they're able to negotiate the best discount. I mean, it was a pretty incredible system they've built there.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I've dealt with David for years, and as a matter of fact, I spoke at his events. Make sure you say hello to David when you see him for me. But, yeah, it's a great organization, and one of the things I respected about him versus some other associations is he straight up right from the beginning. He's there to make a profit himself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he's damn good at it. But I will tell you what I've learned about David. You know, in the beginning, we had a couple talks. I almost found him a little, I want to use the right word, not aggressive or overbearing, but definitely very business-minded. And, you know, get to the point and let's move this on, that kind of thing. And I had an impression of him that turns out to be exactly wrong. David Owen might be the one of the nicest, most giving, generous people I've ever met. You would not believe how many people and organizations in his own community that he supports and gives incredible amounts of money to. And his employees are unbelievably happy and loyal. I don't know if anybody ever leaves here.
Yes,
everybody has been here for a long time.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, it's a pretty incredible organization. I am even more impressed than I thought I was going to be.
One thing that I've noticed over the years dealing with business people, when you bump up against somebody that knows what they're talking about inside and out, it's almost like it's built into their DNA, at times they come across as a bit abrasive because they're just not going to tolerate nonsense and bullshit. And so you get a guy like him, and, you know, somebody is trying to ask a question. Maybe they don't know a lot about what they're talking about. They're trying to learn, and he'll shoot something down as soon as they'll say it. They're like, oh, well, that was nasty. No, it's not nasty. He just knows what he's talking about. And so, I mean, Kevin, you do the exact same thing. Some of these guys call in. They don't know their numbers. It does sound very abrasive and very confrontational, but you just don't tolerate bullshit well. And you just don't have time. Nobody's got time for it. And so, somebody's screwing up, you've seen it enough times, you understand where conversations are going. And so it's almost a good thing when you bump up against a guy like that, there seems to be that little abrasiveness. I always see that as a good sign. This guy probably knows what in the hell is going on.
When you look at what David and Buster have created from starting out on a card table.
I love the stories of what they've been
through.
Oh,
my gosh.
Started.
And how they got together. I'm sure David won't mind telling
some of these stories. Do you know how well, I'll just tell the story, because even if you know how, nobody else is going to. So David and Buster both came from Comdata. That's how they got started in the trucking industry. David was a golf pro for years and then, you know, couldn't make the tour. And I found out what a horrible life most golf pros have. They work like 90 to 100 hours a week and never make any money and don't have any days off. I mean, it sounds like a horrible. So he looked at that and thought, you know, I'm not going to do this the rest of my life. And I'm probably not going to make it onto the tour itself and make any money. So he got a job in sales at Comdata. He's one of their best salespeople at the time. Buster was there. That's where they met. David leaves Comdata and then eventually gets this idea to start up Nastic, and he wants to get a hold of Buster, but Buster has now left Comdata and David doesn't have any contact information for him. And we're going back to like the 1980s. It's not like you could get on, you know, Facebook or LinkedIn and go find somebody. He couldn't find Buster. So he's still working on his idea and trying to figure out how he's going to pull it off by himself. And his wife, Bonnie's at home, and she gets a call from a telemarketer. And I don't even remember what the guy was selling. But
He was selling carpet cleaning.
Oh, was it? It may have been.
Yeah.
So Bonnie's listening to this telemarketer on the phone, and all of a sudden she says, "Is this Buster?" And it was. What are the odds? You know,
wow. How
weird. Yeah. So that's how they ended up getting back together and forming Nastic.
That's amazing.
They used to meet. They used to have their original Nastic convention was a few people gathered around at the truck stop around a table.
I don't doubt it. I'm pretty sure that's how it started. And now their annual event is an awesome event. I was very impressed with every part of it.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, very impressed.
I've been going to that for like, 14 years or so now. And
Yeah, quite an event. So we've got some things in the works. I'm pretty excited about some things. I don't want to say anything yet, but I think there might be some pretty big things in the works out of this.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Definitely an organization that I believe in. They've done some really good things for us. So, you know, if I can help them promote their organization or, you know, get a chance to do something like that, let me know. I'm definitely willing because it's an organization that I believe in. I use it. I believe in it. They've worked for me. So, let me know.
Actually, I have a thought, and I can't say too much about it now, but it would include Alpha Drivers and Henry, you as well.
Awesome.
Yeah, I've got an idea. Awesome. So, kind of a big idea.
All right.
Today I have a lot of meetings. That's why I want to kind of cut out here early today, because I want to get these meetings in before I got to go. And I may have a pretty solid idea by the end of today if it's going to work.
Well, just keep us updated then. Keep us in the loop.
The other thing I like about them, like Joel said, they'll fight for you to help you out and all this and that, but they don't bloviate. We're here to fight for you.
Right, yeah.
Well, you know what was shocking that I didn't know, even after being here for almost a month, and David and I have spent a lot of time together, we've talked about a lot of things, I didn't realize how much they spend and do in Washington. They don't make a big deal out of it. They're not, you know, putting out press releases every day. Well, we're fighting, you know, Washington over this or that, but they're pretty active. And the difference I find is the stuff they're active in is stuff that I actually agree with. Several of the other associations have the stuff they fight for I don't agree with at all.
And they'll work with other ones like the Western States Trucking Alliance with Joe Rakovac.
That's right. Yeah.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
You know. Joe's great.
I'm
a member of that, and I don't even go to California, but that's where a lot of this stuff starts.
Yeah, you just want to support people like that. Here's the other thing that I'm finding, that the partner companies and the vendors, like Joel, you mentioned insurance, when they go out and they act as a broker and look for different insurance companies that can help you with your specific situation. What I'm seeing is that whatever vendors they have, whether it's a company that gets the authority or the insurance or it's their fuel partners, or they have got such tight, strong, really good relationships with those organizations, and they hold them to the same standard. And I think that's what you experienced on the insurance.
Yeah, I will tell you on the insurance side that we had shopped through some different brokers. We had a broker that we were working with that tried to hook us up with a specific company, could not make things work exactly how we wanted them, and the price was outrageous. And when we got in through NASDAQ, they were going to the same carrier, price was in line, and got everything done that we wanted done, and we didn't have to raise a stink to do it. They got their poop together. They got their poop in a group when it comes to this stuff. There's no doubt.
Yeah, they've got enough clout and power now that if you want to be a vendor working with them, you're going to be held to a very high standard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty impressive. All right, we should probably get to some phone calls before we run out of time. Anything else before we grab a call?
Hey, just real quick,
yeah.
Because I get a lot of questions about this. Hopefully I can make this quick. So most of us are aware that when I got my truck here and went out on my own, I had my direct customer. It was a furniture producer that I was running direct for with my own trailer. It was white glove service, blanket wrap. Rate per mile was very, very good. And, you know, now all of a sudden I'm pulling a Schneider trailer and people are losing their friggin' mind, you know. Oh, my God, why would you do that? And what'd you do to piss the furniture company off? I'll tell you what I was looking at and why I made this move. So this is a smaller furniture company. It is very well established, but I'm looking at the economy going, you know, things look to me like they're going to get pretty bad. And as much as I love working with the furniture company, you know, I'm a one-truck operation. And if something were to happen to them, that's going to take me down. So Schneider, in my book, is a flight to safety. What I found out after I got working for them, and I figured I was really going to take it on the chin rate-wise. Now, my rates aren't quite as good, but I run way more miles. Everything's drop and hook. I don't have any waiting time, hardly at all. Very few deadhead miles. And what I've learned is they keep track of all your deliveries, all your times. And if you're over 90% on your pickups and your deliveries, all these magical doors start to open up with all this magical freight that's not on the load boards.
No.
And
no.
I'll tell you,
talk about building a relationship.
It has been damn good. And, you know, I was chatting with my brother, and he's got, like, the world's best poker face when it comes to this shit. You can throw numbers in front of him, and you cannot tell what he's thinking. And I laid this stuff out. You can see that eyebrow go up and a little smile get in his face. He's like, that's all right. So, yeah, it was just pretty cool. The experience over at Schneider, you know, to me it was first and foremost a flight to safety. I was afraid that if things got really bad in the economy that, you know, people are just not going to buy furniture. And as good as their rates were and as good as that company has been to me, I was a little nervous. And at some point, I will probably start to run furniture again in the future once I understand what's happened with the economy. But I'll tell you, this has been great for my little company. Schneider's been great people to work with. The rates are way better than what people would expect. And I know they're going to go right onto their app and look at rates and they're going, oh, these suck.
Yeah.
Some of it does, but
right.
There is a lot of stuff that you don't see on, and a shocking amount that they're not even going to offer you till they understand that you're going to deliver their stuff on time and you're going to represent the company well. Then the doors start to open up. But it's been good. The rate per mile, not quite as high, but, you know, we're doing furniture. A lot of stops and starts. You know, there's 30 drops per load. Maybe I was running 110,000 to 120,000 miles. You know, a year we're probably going to go 250,000 as a team.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, there's not that big a delta in the rate. So you can just imagine what that does to the bottom line.
Well, it's been good. You bring up some of those bad rates, and, you know, they're out there. And
they are.
The reality of it is sometimes the lowest rate per mile is your most profitable run. If all of your fixed costs are covered, that low rate was there because there wasn't much freight in that area or whatever it may be. And when I had owner-operators leased to me, I had the hardest time with them, like when we get up to Massachusetts with a flatbed. We made killer money going in. All the fixed costs were covered. Whatever you got was pure profit.
Well, and also look at, you know, which load's going to take me how many days before I get it off. If it adds a day, then the rate isn't as good as it looks. So there's a lot of nuance there, too.
Right.
Joel, I'm glad you told this story for two reasons. One, that nuance of running the business and actually walking away from a customer that, like you said, on the surface, everybody looks at you, why would you do that? But you're thinking ahead. You're looking around the corner. What's coming next? And I want to be prepared for it. That's just good, smart business. And then the idea of pretty quickly, it didn't take you long to get into that preferred status at Schneider and start getting access to better stuff.
And the other part of this equation is, too, you see the elephant hunters out there. They want that $4 a mile rate, and they double down on that as we're going into bad times. And here's what I've learned over the years. If it seems too good to be true, it typically is.
Yeah.
So when everybody else is shitting their $4 a mile rate, there's a good chance that your money's going to be paid slow or you're not going to get it at all. And then what good is that $4 a mile rate? Accounts receivable with Schneider, a lot of stuff we submit in the morning, that afternoon, it's hitting the bank account. I never have to worry, am I going to get paid by this guy? And when I was doing stuff on DAT for my backhauls off furniture, we got smoked once or twice, and some of it was slow pay. And you know what? I don't want to play that game. And this allows me to focus on my efficiency because I just do not have to worry. Are they going to take it? And we've got an internal broker, and, I mean, she is on it. She knows where we're going. She's throwing options at us. She knows what we like to do now. She knows what we're looking for. And I'll tell you, it literally, and I know this sounds cheesy, but it's like working with your family with that. With this particular broker, she is awesome. Yeah. Oh, my God, is she good. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yep. So since we're on that topic, I was going to hold this, but by the time I do another show, because this is my last show till Monday at least, I'm going to throw this out there. So I don't want to go too deep down the rabbit hole, but the SBTC, Joel, are you familiar with that group at all?
No.
Small Business Trucking Coalition.
No, I
don't know who they are, but
that crap. You hear some of the goofy nonsense that comes. I just don't have time.
You want to hear goofy nonsense. So he's had something for me for a couple of decades. I have a long history with this guy. I'm not going to go through it all, but I've gotten more cease and desist letters from attorneys and just for saying stuff online. I mean, it is so ridiculous. So this time the group got pissed off. I'm not exaggerating. They posted and reposted over 40 times, and they tagged everybody you could imagine, the multiple FBI offices, the Capitol Police, 17 different congressional representatives, local police departments, and the post was, Kevin Rutherford needs to be arrested for his comments to the congressman, which was almost 3 years ago now. They just did this huge campaign. They posted it everywhere. Facebook, Twitter, everywhere.
Well, they got you now, Kevin. They got you now.
Yeah, yeah. At one point, one of the posts was, so where does Kevin have that RV park now? The FBI wants to know. Seriously, think about stupid shit. So here's their big beef. They are making a hard push for broker transparency. And I am very outspoken against it for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. One, it's anti-business. It's anti-American. Nowhere in business do we require anybody to show profits to somebody else. That's part of the transaction. Mm-hmm. That is so anti-business, I don't even get it. Now, look, I understand that the regulation still exists, but if you go back to when it got started and why it got started, it's just a stupid leftover. It doesn't make any sense in today's world, and it shouldn't be there. And as long as everybody was ignoring it, who cares if it's still there? But it's still there. They're making a big push. So the other day they actually posted. Now, I'm not sure how much of this is true because you can't get any details out of them. They posted that they were able to get Pete Buttigieg and the FMCSA to force TQL to show a rate confirmation to a carrier. Some carrier they're calling Pink Cheetah or something. It's some woman-run carrier. I don't know anything about them other than somebody went and did some digging. And, here's what they claimed. They claimed once they saw the rate confirmation from TQL, and they were very specific about their wording. They said TQL only paid the carrier 56% of the rate. Now, first off, my first thought is, so what? Who cares?
Yeah.
The carrier negotiated the rate, accepted the rate, hauled the freight. Now they want to see the details afterwards, which I've never understood why. It's already done.
Right.
You accepted the rate, move on. So, but if you think about it, why didn't they say that the broker kept 44% of the rate? They didn't say that. They specifically said the broker paid 56%. It was a reefer load, So my guess is there's a big lumper fee in there somewhere.
Oh, most likely, yeah.
Because because then you can accurately say they paid 56%. But if there's a big broker fee, you can't actually say they kept 54%.
Right.
Immediately people said, well, let us see the details then. If you're claiming this is, and they're trying to claim this is the norm, that this happens all the time, that these brokers are keeping 40%+ of the rate. We know that's not true. Ask anybody in a brokerage. It's not even close to being true. But that's what they're trying to claim, but they won't show any of the details. And they claim, well, it's confidential. If you want to see it now, you can file a Freedom Information Act with the FMCA, but we're not going to show you any of the details. But that's so. Then we find out that this Pink Cheetah Express looks a little odd. They've got a, I may get some of the details wrong here, but I think they have a mailing address in New York and a physical address in Florida. There's just some things you start looking at. And it looks to me like their authority was only intrastate. I'm not sure if I'm seeing that correctly. And as of now, their authority has been suspended for quite some time.
So my first question to Pink Cheetah Express is, why did you take the load if you didn't like the rate?
Exactly. That's what this boils down to.
That's exactly right. If you don't like the rate, don't take the load. Bottom line, that's all you need to know.
It seems so simple. Why do we have to even talk about this or argue? And I don't even want to talk about the other details. Was their authority active? Why do they have two different addresses? Was there a lumper fee? I don't care that they got that the broker got 44% if they did. Too bad.
So sometimes my broker, internal broker at Schneider, will call me and she says, I need help. And I say, okay, what you got? And she's got some short little bump and the rate is just garbage. You know what I mean? But because she takes care of me, I said, well, if you need me to run this, I'll take care of it for you. So I'll go take care of it for her. Now, a lot of people are going, oh, you're the most evil son of a bitch that ever was. I will tell you, when I help her out with that one load, I am going to get 10 or 12 super loads out of her because we were willing to say, oh, okay, yeah, I'll take care of this for you. It sucks, but you know what? It can't all be good all the time. And, people with that expectation are just ridiculous. And I will tell you, I actually hope that the companies that I work for, haul loads for, are making a lot of money on these loads.
Yes,
I don't want them going broke. I don't want them teetering on the edge. Make all the money you can. If your rate works for me, I'll haul your load. I don't care how much they made on the load. The more, the better. You know?
I honestly
don't. And these guys that freak out about it, why?
Well, both of you guys are familiar with brokered freight from the other side, from the broker side. You know what the typical rates are. You win some, you lose some, you actually lose money on some of these brokered loads. That happens. The average margin for brokers, for as long as I've been checking the records, is somewhere between 14 and 16%. Always has been. There's several sources of this number, too. One is, and as soon as I mention this, they all freak out, because one is that the TIA does a survey of all their members every year, and they publish all of these numbers. What's the gross rate they're getting? What's the net they're getting? What are their business expenses? Like a good association should, right? That's what associations should be, helping you run your business better and showing you how you compare to everybody else. Now, granted, all those numbers are voluntary, but why would anybody lie about them? What purpose would there be to a broker responding to a survey from the TIA, what purpose would there be to lie to them?
Kevin, I will be completely honest with you. I've heard them say it. That's how they control the freight market. Come on.
I'll be completely honest with you. if I had that list set in front of me and I saw one broker was only making about 8% and another was making 22%, but I looked at the rate to me, and if the rate to me was roughly the same, I'm going with the guy that's making 22% because I know his business is going to be financially stable. He's going to be around.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not – yeah, I mean, this is just pure stupidity for the most part. I don't understand it. Now, you know – that there's this disconnect between, you know, employee drivers and wages, and this kind of all gets muddled together. I'm the first guy that's going to stick up for employee drivers and the overtime and everything we talk about, but
right.
I'm also going to be the first guy that pushes it back against an owner-operator that's demanding all this nonsense. Because you know as well as I do, what will happen is the government's going to take over, and then you make no decision. Government tells you what to do, you go do it. And you think there's corruption now? Wait till you have to grease a politician's palm to get a load. Then you're going to see corruption.
Well, and then there's another source to go find this number. If you take the biggest brokerages, the ones everybody complains about the most, they are publicly traded companies, and they are required to report their numbers every quarter and every year. And you can go look, anybody that wants to can go look up their entire financial picture and see exactly how much money they take in, how much money they spend in every category. And when you go look at the big brokerages, they fall right in line with the 14 to 16%, just like the survey from the TIA.
Yes, yes. No, I agree with you. It's just,
so,
you know, the big problem, I think, is that in our industry, most owner-operators and small carriers are rate chasers, and they live and die by the rate. They don't concentrate on efficiency, whether it's the efficiency operationally in terms of the truck or their bookkeeping and, you know, internal in the back office. You have to take care of that stuff. When you take care of that stuff and you're an efficient operation across the board, these rates are not as big a deal as what, you know, the rate chasers are. You know, it is a big deal to them because they live and die by it. And I understand why they're complaining, but if they just concentrate on their efficiency, this all goes away.
Well, you forgot.
It's just bad business on their part.
Yeah, you forgot the dynamic duo. We call it chasing the rate and one and done.
Yeah.
They're gonna deal with a broker one time more than likely. And then they're done. They move on to somebody else.
Yeah, to me, having watched this for decades in the trucking industry, you know, we've learned to survive and thrive in downturns. And I can tell you right now, rate chasers, they're the ones that always struggle, always.
Yeah.
They live large for a while, you know, and they're laughing at everybody and, I got it, and I put it over on that broker, and if I don't get $5 a mile, I ain't starting my truck, and yada, yada, yada. And it's all great when things are good, but the second they turn bad, look what they're doing. They're crying to the government, please come save me. I can't operate my business. Please, government, save me. You know, and the guys that were making fun of the current administration just a little while ago when rates were high, now they're begging them for help. That's just amazing, absolutely amazing. Well,
with everything both of you know about how all this works, what do you think the odds are that the very first rate con that the FMCSA demands somebody show to the carrier turns out to be a 44% margin? Come on.
Really? Yeah.
Come on.
Uh-huh.
We're supposed to believe. Now, show me 10 then. Show me 10 rate cons from the same. You know, are you going to cherry pick them all? And does this rate con even exist? I'm starting to wonder.
My personal opinion, I don't even care if it does because it doesn't mean
a
damn thing. It's one load out of how many loads that are shipped in a year?
Yeah.
So what's it mean?
Yeah.
Well,
it means
circling
nothing.
The wagons back around to what we were originally talking about, these same people also want the government to fix their parking problem.
Exactly right. When it'll be 5 years before the government gets around to any kind of solution on parking, and yet we've got private companies that and individual drivers and owner-operators who have already figured out the parking problem, and it's not a problem anymore.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm with you.
Calls. We went down a rabbit hole there. It's kind of fun, though. Let's go to Nevada. Ron, you're first up today. What's on your mind?
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
Good.
Good. I wanted to talk about Joel Salatin, then Rogue Food Conference. And I read his latest book. It's great.
Yeah, it is.
Homestead Tsunami. Homestead,
yeah,
Tsunami.
I love that book.
Yeah. But, okay, first I want to talk about books. Because I know how you like to read. I like to read, recommend books.
Yes.
But, you know, there just aren't that many good ones. Not like Homestead Tsunami. And I'll tell you why. It's because here's the book that I've noticed it a couple times now. And finally I nailed the problem. Okay. You know, books like Peter Zinn, The End of the World is Just the Beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's another one I read. Well, I didn't finish it. Control Agark. I don't know if you ever heard of that one. But anyway, they're written by gay men, and they never admit they're gay guys. So you read the whole book and hear his worthless opinion. And, hey, if I knew the guy was gay, I never would have bought the book. You know what I mean?
No, actually,
I
don't.
I'll tell you why. I live in Las Vegas, Nevada. I've been a truck driver. I use Las Vegas for my home base. All the sex trafficking that goes on in the United States is done by gay men.
No, it's not. Ron,
yes,
come on.
Yes, it is. I'm telling you. I'm
no,
telling
not.
You a fucking fact.
Ron. You're usually much more level-headed than this. Have you been drinking today?
I don't drink. I haven't drank for 23 or 24 years.
No,
I'm not drinking. I'm telling you that
Ron,
in Las Vegas. Okay.
There are plenty of heterosexual people who are engaged in sex trafficking as well. And I've got to tell you, I don't care who people sleep with or who they are attracted to. To me, they're humans, and we're all basically the same. There's some good people who are gay. There's some bad people who are gay. There are good truck drivers.
I know all that shit, and I'm tired of hearing about it. Okay. The sex trafficking is done by gay men. It's a fucking gang of gay men.
There are plenty of heterosexuals that do the exact same evil.
Okay. Maybe I'll start at the beginning. Okay. You know who J. Edgar Hoover is, right?
Hold on.
You know
hold on.
You know who J. Edgar Hoover is?
Hey, Ron, I know I said it was a free-for-all, but we're not going to do that today. I'm a little short on time today. I want to get to some stuff that matters. Call me on Monday. Monday's another free-for-all, and I'll let you rant about J. Edgar Hoover and gay people or whoever you want to talk about. Let's go to Oklahoma. Paul, welcome to the program.
Howdy. Back to trucking. So I got a couple of comments, and then I have two questions for Joel. So the fuel and the parking – I can equate it to milk and cookies. Oh, pay for a milk and you get a free cookie. Oh, thanks. Pay for fuel and you get a free parking spot. But all of a sudden, one day, here's your cookie, but now it's a dollar. I don't want it. I'm not taking it. You've just been giving it to me for that long. You just need to keep giving it to me. And that's exactly where we're at. People don't want to pay for shit. If you give it to them for free for long enough, they expect it. Yep.
And you know what has made that significantly worse is the internet. Everybody thinks everything on the internet should be free. You should just give it away on the internet. Yeah.
Free shipping. Free shipping. Yeah. You're right.
Free everything. Yeah. And in reality, nothing is free. If any company that offers free shipping did away with their free shipping, they would be able to lower the price on their products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I haul all these vehicles for free, but I get paid really good for loading and unloading them.
There you go.
Yeah. Right. Let's go back to when the parking free started to be given away. And I did a lot of studying on this. And after 1980, when the industry deregulated, the carriers literally started using the truck stops as their terminals to stage trucks, more so than they ever did before. Because prior to 1980, a lot of the freight moved through hub and spoke.
Right.
And let's go back. Also go back to that time. Back then, the majority of the trucks didn't even have sleepers on them. The truck stop restaurants were full.
Yep.
Now they're a ghost town. This whole facility needs paid for. A lot of things changed, and carriers using terminals or truck stops as a free terminal. You know that road had to run out to an end because most of them are sitting on pretty valuable real estate that could be used for something else.
My first broker
look at
office.
Look what happened to the TA in Nashville. Oof, gone.
Yeah. Exactly.
My first broker office was a hotel room that we moved all the hotel furniture out of, and I moved in office furniture, and it was at a truck stop. And remember how common that used to be?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Same
way with the banks of phones, too. Remember that?
Yeah,
one of the reasons
we did a lot of trip leasing, so I had magnetic signs, and when I booked a load with somebody, they would come to the truck stop, sign the paperwork, we'd give them their magnetic signs, and off they'd go.
Yeah. Speaking of the lack of sleepers on the trucks back in the day, so my grandfather, and Kevin, you'll probably recognize Norwalk Truck Lines.
He drove
for Norwalk Truck Lines. And yeah, and they slept in bunkhouses. His original run was Norwalk to Boston. It took a week to get out, a week to get back. And there were bunkhouses along the way, and then he ended up doing a run out to Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And, they just rolled him in. He'd sleep in a bunkhouse. Somebody else would jump in the truck and take it. And then when another truck, would come back through, that's how that shit worked. It slip speed everybody every which way.
That was serious.
Remember how serious some of the people used to get about their CB radio, AM, FM, 8-tracker, cassette player combo that they would carry and plug into the truck?
Yep.
Some of them were pretty elaborate.
Yep.
So those guys in Aussie running Cummins, like the ones that work in Western Australia in the mines and the dust and all the outback shit. Mm-hmm. If they can get to 500,000 kilometers, so 300,000 miles before it needs a reboot, they're lucky. Mm-hmm. They'll count that as a bonus because a lot of them, they reboot at 250,000 kilometers because if they're running at 480,000 pounds and a lot of the time it ends up just getting dusted because of the dust. So the cost of trucking over there is rather expensive, but they know how to move product. So now, the VNL turbo compound, can I get that technology in a day cab truck?
I believe so.
Okay.
I believe so.
One step closer. Yeah. So that load you're on now, when you got an axle up, what tire pressure do you run on your wide single? Are you up like 130 or something, or to carry the weight?
Yeah. Yep.
So your lift axle, do you run that at a lesser pressure, or?
I do. I have that down around 90 pounds.
Okay. That's all I got. I'll carry on. Let the next man in. Thanks.
Right. That's all we need. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Maryland. Jeremy, welcome.
Hey, guys. I'm sure you've talked about this before. Doesn't it seem like no matter what you're pooling, like say you start out a travel trailer and with your personal vehicle or even our truck, we only get 10 miles to the gallon regardless. Like even the F or the 350s, the 250, 1500 trucks, if you pull something, don't you, doesn't it seem like pretty much just get 10 miles to the gallon?
You know,
I don't know. My dad had a suburban.
My dad had a suburban with a 450, or not a suburban. It was a one-ton dually with a 454 and a three-speed with 456 gears. We had a 42-foot fifth wheel, and it got 4 miles to gallon. It never even made it to 10.
Hey, that had to be awful. A three-speed transmission.
So.
When you talk about the one-ton dualies and all that, and I get a kick out of talking to the hot shots and seeing where their fuel mileage is, and I'm beating them with a semi. But a lot of the problem comes into the air, because I found from just being behind somebody, not tailgating them, the best thing I can follow besides a car carrier for fuel mileage is a great big fifth-wheel camper behind a one-ton dually. They must do something awful terrible to the air because they open up a giant hole in front of them, and I just see my fuel thing just go off to the right.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I'll run a little faster to stay behind them because they break such a big hole in the air, and I don't know why. That and the fact that per pound, they are actually way overpowered, like incredibly way overpowered. These new one-ton dollies have more horsepower and torque than the first semi-trucks I drove that moved 80,000 pounds.
You know what they're missing, though?
Oh, okay.
The truck and the fifth wheel that they're pulling, they could all use better brakes.
Well, they got really good brakes on the truck. The trailer's just non-existent.
the part that most people miss on these one-ton trucks, and Kevin, you talk about, like, the durability in the engine's not quite there, and Henry's made the point that they have more horsepower and torque than the engines that we started out with in big Class 8 trucks. The key part of this that everybody's missing that nobody talks about, that I talk about all the time, it's the piston speed required to make that horsepower and torque. They have to run much, much higher piston speed, which results in a whole lot more parasitic drag. Wears the engine out faster. So while it is capable, is it the most efficient way of doing it? Absolutely not.
Very good point.
Add to that, Joel, in most cases today, they have to have four-wheel drive yet on top of that, so they're turning a front differential. Even though it's not engaged, they're turning it. And I'm like, it's a highway truck. As a matter of fact, I can't even understand the phenomena of why so many vehicles are four-wheel drive today. It's like, you're in Florida and you got a four-wheel drive. Where are you going?
Yeah. Interesting we got onto the hot shot thing. I was here at NASTIC the other day, and they got a call from somebody who was a member, and they were just looking for some advice. And David asked me, he said, hey, would you mind talking to this woman? She called me the other day, and I didn't have a lot of answers for her. Would you mind talking to her? And I said, no, not at all. Let's call her. So turns out this woman is an engineer by trade. She has a small business of her own. And I never really asked why. Well, she kind of said it was to help somebody out, friend, I think. She bought a pickup and a hotshot trailer and put this guy in business in it. She owns everything. She was paying him as an independent contractor, which I had to inform her was incorrect. You can't do that. And I'm a stickler for that because I love the independent contractor model, and I hate the fact that it's under attack everywhere, and the groups that want to attack it will always point out the people who are doing it wrong. So when I find somebody doing it wrong, I always make it a point to tell them that your driver is not an independent contractor. You should not be paying him that way. They're employees. And she was fine. She said, look, I just didn't know. I asked other people, and they told me it was okay. And I said, well, it's not. And then I went through the numbers, and the reason she was calling is she's not making any money. And I said, look, I'd love to help people be more profitable, but we've got a real problem here. I don't think I can make you profitable. The hotshot market is a really, really tough market in any economy. In a bad economy, it's a disaster. When you read the paper and all these people are getting laid off, some of those people already own a pickup truck. And guess what they go do? They can't find a job, so they go get into the hotshot market. It's so easy to do. And because of that, in tough times, the rates are going to be absolute crap, and you're going to have to figure out how to make it with those rates, and you really can't with the driver in the truck. I said the best you can hope to do in the hotshot market is create a good job for yourself. And a good job is difficult. And in bad times, you're lucky if you can throw off $40,000-$45,000 worth of profit out of one of these. And I got talking to her and she said, well, you know, I don't really need the money. She said, I'm fine. I was really trying to help this guy. He needed a job. And I said, well, and she has a profit and loss and everything. I said, send me your numbers. I'll look through it, but I'm not very encouraged that there's going to be a whole lot we can do here. And she's getting like 9 miles to the gallon on this thing, which we can do way better than that with a tractor. Well, I said, the maintenance is going to kill you on this thing. You're going to go through tires and brakes and just all kinds of maintenance costs. I said, this is just a bad business model.
Not only that, Kevin, most of them are geared horribly wrong.
Right. Well,
they're geared to be in town, not out on the highway humming along.
Yeah, and they've got that crazy high RPM, crazy piston speed because they're trying to make up for a lack of power and torque with gearing. And it's not a good business model. And to think that you could own one of these things and put a driver in it and make any money is kind of crazy.
And the barrier to entry means you're going to have a lot of competition that's going to undercut you.
Tons. And like I said, when times go bad and people get laid off, many of them already own a pickup truck. They don't even have to go buy something to get into business. They might need a trailer. How cheap are those? It's not a big barrier.
I was so lucky. And when I was first looking to get in trucking way back on my own, I had the opportunity to where I was looking at, do you remember Morgan Driveaway?
Yeah. Yep.
But fortunately for me, the one person I worked with at the chicken plant where I drove truck, his wife worked at Morgan Driveaway, and she said, you don't want to do this.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's.
That's when they did it with 454s and 460s.
Yeah.
Got a question.
Back to Maryland. Hey, Jeremy, I put you on hold because you were really noisy in the background there.
Sorry about that. I got a question then, I guess. So would you guys just pull, if you were going to pull a travel trailer once in a while, would you just pull it with your personal vehicle, your Toyotas or whatever you have? What would you pull it with?
If it was an occasional
thing. How big a travel
trailer?
Yeah.
Almost regardless. If it's an occasional trip with a travel trailer, use your personal vehicle because it's just an occasional trip. Now, if you're serious about this and you're going to get out on the road with it, go buy yourself a Class 8.
And let me tell you about that. If you're not going to go buy a high-end trailer or high-end fifth wheel, don't bother, because if you're going to put that many miles on something that it's worth doing it with a Class A truck, you're going to replace that fifth wheel or that trailer every 2 years.
Yep.
Well, let's go farther on that. For a while, I didn't have a pickup truck, and I needed a pickup truck, but I didn't need a pickup truck enough to go in debt to buy a pickup truck.
Yeah,
and I made a little bed that I put on the back of my truck, and I'd use that to go to Lowe's.
Yeah,
there you go.
I took my semi in.
Yeah,
I went to. I remember when I picked up a couch the one time that I had bought, and they said, "Do you need us to deliver it?" No, I didn't need to pay the delivery. I had a 53-foot trailer there to put it in. They said, wow, you got enough space.
That's right.
But, you know, to go 10 miles, it wasn't that big of a deal to take my semi-truck. It wasn't worth buying a $35,000 pickup truck at the time.
Exactly. Jeremy, does that help?
Yeah. So you guys like Toyotas? As far as
I got a Toyota.
I do. Yeah, I have one too, and
okay.
I like it a lot.
And Henry?
I have a Jeep.
Okay.
I have
so
a Jeep
like
Wrangler, and I have a 3.6 liter, and my semi often gets better fuel mileage than my Jeep, but fortunately, in the last year and a half, I was just looking at that. I drove 2,500 miles in my Jeep, so it don't really matter.
Doesn't matter much.
I see. All right.
And same
way
with my Jeep.
Okay.
I wanted a pickup again, but I looked at pickups and they were expensive.
Yeah.
So I bought a utility trailer I put behind my Jeep. It does everything the pickup truck would have done.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely don't want to overpay, but how long do these trucks last, cars and trucks last? 250,000 or just if they break, just fix them? If you got a good
mechanic. What kind of truck are you talking about? You're talking about a diesel.
Just Ram. No, I'm talking about, you know, a Ram, a GMC, Toyota.
Definitely. Toyota, there's a lot of quality there. But I think just about any truck today, if you took care of it, you could get 200, 250,000 miles out of them.
Here's one of the things to keep in mind, though, when you're talking specifically about a smaller diesel engine, and we've been putting together the relationship between, you know, piston speed and emissions and whatnot. Just keep in mind these smaller diesels run at higher RPM. They have to make the horsepower and stuff that they are capable of. So you will tend to see more emission issues on these smaller engines, diesel engines that are just driven around for joy, because you're not putting any load on them. They're not under load, so they're not working hard to get hot. They have relatively high piston speed, and there's opportunity for issues there. So if
V8s
it were me, and I'm looking at a personal pickup truck, I bought a gas. I'm a diesel guy,
okay.
But I bought a gas because I didn't want to put up with the headaches because look. My girlfriend drives it. She takes it to the mall. You know, she's not pulling loads with it. I'm not buying a diesel for her to go to the mall. Just not
barely
doing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks. So, yeah. Yep.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to – go ahead, Henry.
Going down that road, Kevin, I remember back, and this is in 79, when diesel pickup trucks started becoming popular, and they did better on fuel than – the gas counterparts, and we showed horses back then, my stepfather and mother, and we put on a decent amount of miles, but when he started figuring out the fuel economy difference, and he could not make it up in the life of the truck, and we got a 460 Ford.
Yeah, it's, you know, I like diesels too, but you just got to be practical when you look at this stuff. Let's go to Colorado. Doug, welcome.
Hey, guys, I didn't realize what the show was. I came in late and called in. I just had a couple of questions on health, but I can certainly call back another day so you get some other callers.
No, that's what, we've only got two calls left, yours and one more, and then we're going to wrap up for today. So go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think it's pretty simple. You talked about on the aptogens for boosting immune, and I thought there was four, but when I look online, I only see three on the capsule. And that's confusing. Is Calm the fourth one, the T?
Say that again. I didn't really understand the question.
You talked about the new adaptogens that you have in the capsule for immune.
Yeah.
To help boost our immune system and stuff. And when I look online, I thought you talked about four of them. And when I look online, I see three in the capsule.
No, I think there is only three. But you might be confusing when I talk about the stress protocol. I always talk about four things.
And then for my reason for really diving into this, I take the silver spray and the drop,
okay.
The D3, the K3, D2, whatever. I do all that, but we're getting ready to go on vacation in a month, going to Hawaii 2 weeks, and I really want to, I don't want to ruin this if I get a little cold on the plane or whatever. So I'm trying to boost.
So I'm trying to front load
30 days.
Here's what I would do. And this is what I'm getting ready to do when I get back home. Because there does seem to be a lot of stuff going around. A lot of people are getting sick. I like to make sure I'm as prepared as I possibly can be. I don't want to get sick. We have something in our store called immune support packs. And that's what I'm going to start on when I get home. The pack comes with, it's got quite a bit in it. It's got vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc, selenium, NAC, which is almost an unknown supplement, which is awesome for your immune system. It's got five or six other things in it. It is a really, really good immune supporting. It's really kind of a biotics put it together for us. You know, normally we create a kit out of multiple supplements. These packs are already kind of a kit in a bottle. So you just pull out a package, and that's your daily, and you open it up and you just take everything that's in that package.
Okay. All right. Very good. And then on the Garmin watch, I'm looking for, I stay pretty regional, so I'm not really looking for accurate sessions. But I do, I'm trying to, my sleep is like yours, it's hours a night.
You're fading out and breaking up, and I know you were talking about the watch, but I'm not getting much.
I was in a big dip there. I stay pretty reasonable. Well, I'm looking for on the Garmin Instinct 2. I don't really need the tracker edition, but my main thing is HRV and like that. I want the benefits on that are on the watch.
Yeah.
The Instinct 2, is that the one I should be looking at?
Yes. Yeah, and the other thing I actually liked about the Instinct 2 that they didn't carry over into the trucker's version, it's not a huge deal, it's certainly not a deal breaker, but if I were getting an Instinct 2, I would get the solar version. It's actually got a little solar panel built into the face, and between the great batteries they have on these things and the solar, I used to go 30-plus days without charging in the summertime.
Okay, great. All righty. And then one more, just a comment. I listen to all your shows all the time. If you, at the beginning, promote your store, I have a friend of mine, and he just started listening, and he says he has a store, and I went, Yeah. Everything you talk about, he has in his store. And, you know, I listen to other podcasts like during hunting season or whatnot, and they always tell about something that they have on sale. And I thought, right, what a great idea. You always have something on sale. There's always 10% off something or 20% off. You throw that out at the beginning, you're kind of like your own sponsor. Just food for thought, because...
No, I agree with you completely. I need to get better at that. I really do. The store and Lisa and the team, they send me this stuff all the time. Hey, why don't you mention this today? And I get so focused on the callers and the questions, and I should do more of that. You're right.
But I, you know, then someone calls up and says, "Oh yeah, I couldn't find Cardio Miracle at your store," or something like that. Something simple as that. So I ordered it from Amazon. And I'm going, come on. I'm going to call you and ask for advice, but you're not going to support. I cringe at that. It's just, I've got to call Kevin and ask him. Just say something at the beginning. You know, good morning. Hey, today, we have this.
You're right. Thank you. In fact, I am going to take your advice right this minute, right now. I hardly have ever even talked about this product, but I actually like it. As much as I love technology, and I've got electronic notepads, and I got all kinds of crazy technology,
I still take the majority of my notes with paper and pencil. I just find that my mind works better and it's clearer and I get more creative, and paper and pencil still works for me. So I journal a lot. And we actually took some time a couple of years ago, the team did. I had a little bit of influence on the design and the layout, but we created a really cool Master the Journey journal. And it's designed around the way I take notes and organize my day. And there's all kinds of cool stuff in there for drivers. And we hardly ever talk about it. But you can actually get that journal for free right now. Free. Remember how we talked about this? All you have to do is spend $150 in the store. And then we'll throw in a free journal. And all you have to do is just add the journal to your cart. Spend $150 in the store. Add the journal to your cart. And it will figure it out all for you, and you'll get it free. So I agree I should promote the store more, but I get all wrapped up in the calls. So thank you for the reminder. All right, final call of the day. We're going to go north of the border. Colin in B.C., welcome.
Hey, how are you doing today? Second time I've called in as the last caller. I wrote a few notes down. Some of the guys here that run older trucks talking about having issues not being able to hear your show well. Amazon makes some really easy to use Bluetooth receivers that you can connect them into the, as long as you have an auxiliary port on your stereo, you can connect it in there. I just got one last week. World of difference in the truck.
Okay.
Second comment, your new phone number for Canadians that don't have an international package, it can be up to 80 cents a minute to call you. So I didn't realize that, but I did enjoy my $37 phone call with you last week. But I got that fixed because
that's more expensive than parking a truck.
Sheesh. Yeah. Oh,
well, actually,
my God.
That's number four on my list. There's a place just in Edmonton. It's called Blackjack's. No fuel, but it's a fenced yard, 24-hour security. You pay your $12 to park for the night, and I think they give you $6 back if you eat at the restaurant that's 24 hours. Great
nice.
Place, awesome wing night. They have bike rallies and stuff in the summertime and car shows. And the place is always busy. There's always tons, and there's probably room for 70. Like, I don't know truck stops in the States, but you can probably park 60 or 70 trucks there. They like wide loads, and it's a big place, nice parking lot. It's always nice and smooth. But yeah, for $12 if you need somewhere to park, we drop trailers there once in a while because it's, you know, safer than leaving it at a truck stop that's free with no security. What else did I have? Oh, reminded me, Paul, when he called in, he's been around your show for quite a while, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah, Paul might have been around longer on this show than I have been. I'm not sure.
Well, I heard him the other day. I like listening to the old shows like Trucking 101, and he was on there, and I think he was talking about a new truck he had, and I'm thinking that's the one he's got a million plus on right now, so I wonder if that's the same one that he got back in like 2016 or whatever that show was on.
I think it is,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of funny to hear his voice. Still sounds the same, but yeah, hearing some of those old people talking, it was awesome. My other comment is finish off with this. I got a place I haul to. This old guy, Dave, he's super grumpy all the time, which is kind of hilarious because I always ask him, I'm like, how bad's your day today, Dave? Like, that's the first thing I say when I see him, and then he starts laughing. But I hadn't seen him in a couple months, and this weekend I was kind of hard on myself because I got into some Christmas baking and was kind of feeling down and out about, you know, needing to get back on track about eating
yeah.
better. And Dave looks at me and he's like, have you done something different? You look different. What is it? And it opened up an opportunity to start telling him about, you know, what I did. I quit eating bread and, you know, basically
awesome.
As carnivore as possible type thing. And he started, by the time we were done, he explained about having all these aches and pains. I'm like, well, when did it start? He tells me. I'm like, well, what'd you eat the day before? And he starts thinking, he's like, oh, I had 4 grilled cheeses, and then I had a sub for lunch, and I had pizza for supper. And I'm like, well, just a thought. Why don't you try? Go 48 hours without any bread and, you know, tell me how you feel after that. And he thought that maybe that would – he thought maybe he has to do something different because and then he's bringing up the old myth, oh, it's because I'm old. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I know some pretty old people that don't feel this way. So
that's exactly
it was,
right.
A good a good boost to my morale about feeling down on myself and realizing, no, you just get back on the wagon and you keep doing it because this is how you live now. So,
and then reach out and help somebody else, and it makes you feel even better.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you. Great show today, as always.
All right.
And we will.
Well, appreciate it. All right, guys, final word.
My final word is that I'm thinking of right now is to treat the truck stops like you would a marina, that it's a no-wake zone. When I think there shouldn't be horns being blown, Jake brakes used to slow down in a truck stop, there's people sleeping. Treat it like a no-wake zone.
That's a good point. I like that. Good public service announcement.
I got a little bit of a different thought here. So we've all seen these little, like, TikTok reels and stuff on social media where they've got this guy explaining why if you drive a Tupperware truck, you're not a real trucker, and how they respect tradition, and they respect this, and they respect that. And because they respect all this, this somehow makes them better than somebody who drives a different type of truck. I just the kind of a thing there. Look up the definition of bigotry and then watch that video and tell me what y'all think.
Well, go a step farther than that. How about what carrier you drive for? I'll never forget there was a driver that drove for a carrier out of Phoenix that gets beat up all the time, and there was no place to sit, and he invited me to sit with him, but he said, you may not want to sit with me when you know who I drive for. I said, I don't care who you drive for.
I don't even care about that. Seriously.
I mean, this stuff is getting, I'm catching so much heat on the Schneider stuff. I giggle about it. It doesn't hurt my, but I can understand why some people would get kind of depressed about this because people are constantly beating, oh, you haul for free. You're the problem. You're the piece of crap of the industry. It's all bullshit. And it's just, you know, this bigoted attitude that people have, you know, based on the color of a trailer you pull, make somebody better than somebody else. That is the most ridiculous shit, and it's a huge problem in our industry. And when lay people look at our industry and they hear this stuff, they got to be thinking we're all kooks.
Well,
because
it's
just
Joel.
Completely nuts.
Joel, they want to improve highway safety, and they pick on orange trailers, and they pick on trailers that have some blue lettering on them. You know, if they really want to improve highway safety, if you go on the statistics, they would ban white trailers because most tractor trailer crashes I see have white trailers.
Yeah, there you go. But no, this whole bigoted attitude is worn like a badge of honor in a very core group of what we will say old school drivers, you know. And look, I have no problem with somebody saying, look, I like to drive this old boxy-looking truck because it's a throwback for me. My grandpa done it. I respect my grandpa. I get all that. But don't tell me because you do this, it makes you better than me. And that's the problem.
Well,
that is the core problem. You can do all that, and that is fine. But when you start to say this makes me better than you because I do this, that's a problem. Look, I'm a Volvo guy. I love Volvo trucks. There are very specific reasons why I like Volvo power, and I'll try to explain those powers. Never once have I ever said, look, I drive a Volvo, and I'm way better than you, dude, because you drive a Kenworth. That's not what's happening.
Same here. Same here. I mean, I have my reasons I like Freightliner in Detroit, but I never drive down the other ones. I stand on my numbers, and there it is. And when we talk about respecting old school, I don't know anybody that goes more old school than I do. My uniform's based on the late 1940s to early 1950s.
There you go.
How old school do you want to go?
Here's a place where they're actually these two groups that I have been talking about lately are taking this to a new level. These groups are actually now fighting and promoting for the fact that you should not be allowed to lease to a carrier. You're not a real owner-operator of them, and that should not exist. They want to see that go away.
Crazy.
Why? Why? What possible reason do – well – And at the same time, they're promoting unions. Like, if they can't even make up their mind if this is about businesses or employees, or they get all these issues all mixed up together, and now it's, well, the independent contractor model, those people are just being taken advantage of. Wait a minute. Hey. I'm an adult. I will decide when I'm being taken advantage of and when I'm not.
Yeah.
Hey, Kevin.
Basically, they're saying, look, we are smarter than you. We will figure this out for you. You're not smart enough to do this on your own, and we will take care of you. No thanks.
Kevin, we're going to go down another rabbit hole.
Well, we don't have much time, so if you've got another comment, you better make it quick.
That was going to be my comment. We could go on for another hour with all that.
Easily. All right, we're going to wrap it up then. You guys have a wonderful weekend. I will be back on Monday, and hopefully I am somewhere west of Denver by then.
Likewise, Kevin, and tell David I said hello, please. And
that will happen here
in
the next
5 minutes.
Yep, I will let him know. All right, thanks, everybody. We will see you next week. Have a great weekend. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey.